Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. And your number one source for Chicago Bulls news and stories. On Twitter at Locked On Bulls, at Jordan C. Malley, and at Bulls _ Pep.
People have their opinion.
What other falsehoods are out there?
A lot of the perception things about us.
Are players buying in, Jim?
Yes.
Fair enough.
Rebuilds are difficult. Sometimes it takes years and years. I still believe, given a really good offseason with this draft pick that we have coming and with our ability to get some veteran players in here alongside these young guys, we can make a substantial leap.
Kick back, relax. Locked On Bulls starts now.
My job is to prepare the child for the road, not the road for the child. And these guys are men.
Here are your hosts, Jordan Malley and Matt Peck.
What's up and welcome into Locked On Bulls, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, streaming live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. I'm your host, Jordan Malley. Along with me is Matt Peck. Follow us on Twitter at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls _ Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. Hit us up on our text and voicemail line, 331-979-1369, the place to do that. We're doing a free agency mailbag episode on Wednesday's show, so tomorrow's episode. So make sure you get your voicemails, your text messages in, reacting to who the Bulls have signed so far, Thomas Adoransky and Thaddeus Young, or you want to go across the NBA. Are you disappointed with the Bulls' moves that they made so far, or are you pleasantly surprised, or anywhere in between? Hit us up at 331-979-1369, the place to do that. Matt, welcome back. Very excited for this episode. So Monday's episode, we decided to just break down the two signings that the Bulls made, the little sign and trade too with the Wizards. But now we want to spend the majority of today's episode talking a little bit about the rest of the free agency chaos that went on Sunday night into Monday morning. But first, Matt, how you doing?
Doing great. What's up, Jordan? What's up, Bulls Nation? Plenty of craziness to get to on today's episode. Looking forward to breaking down everything from the Brooklyn Nets being the giant winners to maybe looking at some of the other potential Bulls targets that went elsewhere and got paid. And I mean, okay, can we just start with this before we get to the really big stuff? Because to me, this is very cool and very important. Robin Lopez and Brooke Lopez are twins playing on the same team. And
I love it.
I love that. I love it so much. And honestly, I think the Bucks got a really good cheap deal for Robin Lopez.
I absolutely love it. I think we were talking about this not too long ago, like about a week or two ago. We said, you know, where are the other possibilities of Robin Lopez going? And I think I had mentioned going up and playing with his brother, Brooke, in Milwaukee. I didn't think that was going to be an actual possibility, though, until it actually happened. So that's going to be a whole lot of fun. Shout out to anybody who's covering the Bucks up there, because those dudes are just going to be full of quotes all year long.
Yeah. And look, I got a little bit of an inside scoop over the weekend. I think we all knew that it was very unlikely that the Bulls were going to keep Robin Lopez around after this past season. You know, they said they valued his veteran leadership, and he certainly saw a lot of looks at times this season when the Bulls really didn't have a whole lot of other options, and he had himself a pretty efficient back half of the season. Even knowing that it wasn't super likely that the Bulls were going to keep him around, I heard some pretty interesting stuff this weekend that apparently he and Jim Boylan, not big fans of each other. The Bulls looking elsewhere in free agency to add to their front court depth, you know, they're excited about Gafford. He's going to be a project. He's probably going to spend a good chunk of time in the G League based on what I've heard. They added Thaddeus Young, which we talked about yesterday. But apparently there was some butting of heads that existed between Jim Boylan and Robin Lopez. I heard that Jim Boylan thought that Robin Lopez was not an easy guy to coach. So whatever that means, interpret it as you will. But I was a big fan of Robin Lopez, nothing but a professional in his time with the Bulls, dealing with all of the weirdness of taking him in and out of the rotation and trying to give minutes to young guys. Always a consummate pro here in Chicago, in addition to being, you know, a great quote, really fun guy to be around. And I'm really happy for him that he's going to contender up in Milwaukee.
Yeah, Robin Lopez, I'm sure, doesn't want to deal with Jim Boylan's bullshit. Plain and simple.
Yeah, I mean, Essentially, yeah.
You know, we got bulls across our chest, and
I mean, he's been around for what, 4 years? This was 4 years of Robin Lopez here, and Jim Boylan's been here for 3 years. So they've had.
He came in the Derek trade. So I mean, from the summer of 16.
Yeah, so three full seasons here, and Jim Boylan was here for all three of those seasons. So it's not like they were relatively new, or this is anything new. This must have been growing his time. That's interesting, but yeah, I mean. Robin Lopez knows how to play the game, and he knows when he's being fed bullshit. So not really that surprised. And, you know, I'm very curious if that, you know how they had like that in-game or that in-practice kind of scuffle happen at the back end of the season. Who was that with Robin Lopez? It was him and somebody else. And then they just kind of brushed it off and said, oh, it wasn't that big of a deal. I can't remember who that was now.
Oh, yeah. I had.
What was that?
I had completely forgotten about that.
Was that with Jim Boy? Was it with a coach or was it with a player? I can't remember.
I think it may have been with a. With a player at practice, I can't remember who, but I do know that according to some sources that he and Jim Boylan did not get.
This is not a negotiation. I'm running this team because the Reinsdorfs want me to, and I'm going to run it that I think is best.
Yeah, not really that surprised. So good for Robin Lopez to go up there and play with Brooke. But let's start here. Let's start with the biggest one of them all, and this was the first one that we all kind of found out about as free agency started. Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, DeAndre Jordan, all going to the Nets. I was kind of shocked, Matt, when I saw this. I really had this feeling in the back of my head that Kevin Durant was just going to hang around and stay with the Warriors. But obviously that not the case, and it was true. Him and Kyrie really did want to play together, and they found a way to do that. So the Brooklyn Nets overnight now become easily one of the favorites to win the East, no?
I mean, not next year, because KD...
Yeah, not next year, but I mean, they're still going to be pretty good.
KD's on the shelf for a year, and you don't know if he's going to come back as the same player he was. I mean, even if Kevin Durant comes back at 75-80%, you know, it's a shame that we'll never see the elite Kevin Durant that we you know, fell in love with as NBA fans in general ever again. But if you can take the gamble to bring that guy to your team, you do it. Which to me is like, yeah, you're basically, you know, redshirting him for a year of a gigantic contract, 4 years, 164, whereas Kyrie, 4 years, 140. The other interesting part, you know, them both deciding to take a little bit of a pay cut from the actual max to allow the Nets to pay DeAndre Jordan a deal for 4 years, $40 million, which I think is pretty curious. So Brooklyn probably next season with Kyrie. And you know, like essentially swapping Kyrie for D'Angelo Russell, adding DeAndre Jordan, and still having a lot of their quality role players around the new stars, are going to be a playoff team again next year. You know, they've got Caris LeVert and all these great pieces around. You know, our old pal Spencer Dinwiddie. That's a good team. To me, like, it's obviously a giant blow for the Knicks. And it makes that organization just look completely embarrassed and outmatched by their what people refer to as like the stepbrother of the two franchises in the biggest market in the NBA. And the thing that I thought was interesting was the reports that that first came out that were like, well, the Knicks weren't prepared to offer Kevin Durant that max contract because of the Achilles tear, which of course, you know, James Dolan is going to get raked over the coals for something like that, even though there is some legitimacy to being hesitant to signing Kevin Durant with that injury. That injury ruins NBA careers, that injury in particular. So I understand that. But then the fact that we got a follow-up from that report that was actually a clarification that said, well, you know, yes, there was some hesitation to offer Kevin Durant a max and basically miss an entire year of giving him max money and not knowing what kind of player he's going to come back to being, that maybe gave some pause to the Knicks, but it's irrelevant because they didn't even get a meeting. The Knicks weren't anywhere on Kevin Durant's radar. Never were, never was going
to
happen.
What's crazy to me is the fact that the Knicks waited all this time to do this, and then all of a sudden that's their excuse. I feel like whether or not that's true or not, it's bullshit. I feel like it's bullshit. You don't save all that cap space. You don't trade Kristaps Porzingis away just to all of a sudden, even with KD having the injury he has, just to say, yeah, you know what, never mind, we're good on that. If that's truly what they did, they don't deserve a single star for the rest of the New York Knicks' existence, or at least till James Dolan sells the team, because that is just dumb.
And they're signing all these two-year deals now to try and realign themselves for the big free agency summer of 2021. But, and I mean, they're signing a bunch of bigs. Like, they're signing a bunch of power forwards and centers, including a couple of old Bulls, Taj Gibson, Bobby Portis. They gave big money to Julius Randle. They already have Kevin Knox, who's probably a more efficient four than he is a three in today's NBA. They got Mitchell Robinson at the five. Like, they're throwing big money at a bunch of guys for, yeah, their short-term deals, but look at what some of the other teams that are trying to adapt to the modern way of aligning yourself to be in a better position next year or 2 years down the road than you are now, that are helping other teams make, you know, multiple team deals and taking on money. The Knicks, you know, cleared up all this cap space, and instead of using it to maybe add themselves some future assets and some draft capital, are just spending it on, like, two-year loaner players, none of whom are going to be franchise changers. It's ridiculous. Like, yeah, Bulls fans are upset about this front office getting as many chances as they've gotten. And Bulls fans are upset with Jerry Reinsdorf and Michael Reinsdorf and think all they care about is getting, you know, a few playoff games and making sure that they're turning a profit. And that's not false. But, oh my God, the New York Knicks are the laughingstock of the NBA. The Bulls were a laughingstock earlier this year with the player mutiny talk and the boiling spirit and toughness and the Kings clowning us, you know, running off our floor with a 30-point victory. Right now, July 2nd, the Knicks are the laughingstock.
Rightfully so. They should be. I mean, this is pathetic. I mean, they signed a bunch of really good players, but nobody that's anywhere near going to be a star in this league. Julius Randle's a pretty decent player. Wayne Ellington's a pretty decent player. Reggie Bullock, I guess. I mean, taking a chance on him, maybe. But it's nothing compared to what they were talking about for the last 3 or 4 months. You know, adding Zion and Kyrie Irving and Kevin Durant. Shout out to Bleacher Report for the SpongeBob video meme that they made where he just draws on his fingers. He's like, the gang's all here, and it's Kyrie, Zion, and KD. And then it ended up not happening, so I just find it the huge dumpster fire in New York. So, and you know what? This is what you get for thinking things are going to happen. Then all of a sudden, and you think it was a done deal, then all of a sudden plans quickly change. So the Brooklyn Nets, yeah, I think that they got a hell of a lot better. And how about DeAndre Jordan just slipping himself in there as the third guy? He's like, yeah, guys, hey, you guys are going to the Nets. You guys need one more guy. All right, I'm in.
Well, honestly, dude, and I can't remember who tweeted something about this. It may have been our pal Ricky O'Donnell. But about how big of a factor USA basketball is when you talk about the forming of super teams and free agent stars in the NBA who want to play together. Because KD, DeAndre Jordan, Kyrie Irving, all buddies, how? Yeah, All-Star Weekend's fun and whatever, but those guys spend time together, traveling together, being teammates for USA basketball. It's a big deal.
Yeah, that's a good call. And that's what I was wondering, where their friendship came from, but that's definitely true.
The thing with DeAndre that makes me curious is, like, dude, the Nets kind of have an emerging, maybe star is a bit of a stretch, but an emerging very good, still very young player at that center spot in Jared Allen. Like, Jared Allen destroyed the Bulls when the Bulls played the Nets this past couple seasons. Looks like a steal from where Brooklyn eventually took him in the draft a couple years ago, and now, are you going to ask Jared Allen to come off the bench because you're going to let DeAndre Jordan start for you?
No shot. I don't think so. I think Jared Allen still starts and DeAndre Jordan comes off the bench.
All right. I mean, you're giving 4 years, $40 million to a guy to come off the bench. That's a pretty hefty price tag. And I mean, I don't know if DeAndre Jordan's ego has ever been that big. You know, certainly there was the whole very exciting extravaganza of the Mavs trying to woo him a few years back and the Clippers, you know, having like a team emergency meeting and a coup and basically kidnapped him to prevent him from happening. So clearly we knew that at some point in recent history, DeAndre Jordan was very much into the idea of being wined and dined as a free agent candidate and a free agent, people that teams were being a suitor for. I don't know. I don't know if the Brooklyn Nets are saying Jared Allen's our starter and DeAndre is going to back him up. Maybe DeAndre Jordan's gotten to the point of his career where he's cool with that.
Yeah, I just can't imagine. And like I was trying to put it in this perspective too, is look at all the other backup bigs and the money that they signed already. Just this free agency. I mean, you can even go back for the last couple of years. A lot of those dudes are making anywhere between $8 and $12 million a year. So it wouldn't be that big of a surprise. I mean, look at what Taj Gibson got with the Knicks. Look what Bobby Portis got with the Knicks. There's a handful of guys out there. And look what the Bulls paid Thaddeus Young to come off the bench for them. $13 and some change, million dollars per year. So it doesn't.
Kings gave Dwayne Dedman $40 million for 3 years.
Yeah, well, let's go to the Kings because I don't know what the hell they're doing.
The Kings are drunk, and I love it.
Unbelievable. Trevor Ariza, 2 years, $25 million. Harrison Barnes, 4 years, $85
Harrison
million.
Barnes stayed. We were talking, I think, briefly on a previous pod about how, you know, Barnes just like wanted out of Sacramento so badly that he declined that ridiculously lucrative player option. But instead, it was just this re-up with the Kings. And they threw more money at that guy.
I can't even believe that. But real quick on that, I feel like this could be a potential move that Otto Porter makes with the Bulls. Decline your option, your player option in that final year, and then sign an extension. And it'll be a little bit lower that first year. But in terms of longevity and what you're going to get paid over the lifetime of that contract, it might make some more sense. So I wouldn't be surprised if Otto Porter Jr. did something like this down the line, but we're still waiting 2 years for that. But that could be a possibility of what he does with this Bulls team, should this Bulls team continue to improve. But yeah, they threw a ton of money at guys. Like Dwayne Dedman was a guy that I wanted the Bulls to sign.
4 years, 85 for Barnes, and then 3 years, 40 for Dwayne
crazy.
Dedman.
Crazy. Absolutely crazy. And then Corey Joseph on top of that.
Corey Joseph! 3 years, 37!
I'm so glad the Bulls passed on that.
Like, I thought he was going to be the budget option the Bulls ended up taking because of the Boylan Spurs connection and the fact that he was, you know, as we were talking about with both Satoransky and Thaddeus Young, a durable, reliable guy. Corey Joseph's been playing pretty much every game all season long for the entirety of his NBA career. So that's why between that and the Boylan connection, I thought that he's the guy that they were going to end up with. But I did not think it was going to cost them, you know, 37 over a three-year deal. I thought it was going to be the cheaper option that they settled for. I mean, good for Corey Joseph's agent. That dude got 3 years and 37. Wow. The Kings spent money in some very interesting ways.
Very, very, very odd ways. But we'll see what happens with that. And they didn't have to really give anything else up. So they've still got their young talent, added a couple of veteran pieces. They're going to be better, definitely, too. I would have liked to see the Bulls take that money that they signed Thaddeus Young to and maybe assigned Trevor Ariza if he was only getting 2 years, $25 million, but obviously didn't even have contact with the Bulls. So I was surprised that he still got a decent chunk of money. He didn't have all that great of a season this year, bouncing between the Suns and the Wizards, but it's hard to do that when you're playing with two shitty teams.
Right, just two garbage teams. I kind of made this a wash season for Ariza. I certainly would have been open to the idea of the Bulls adding him at the wing depth position, but I didn't think it was super realistic just because I hadn't heard anything about interest from him or even interest from the Bulls. You know, 2 years, 25, that's what he got, right? To go to Sacramento. I think that's a pretty fair total for Ariza, who is getting up there. He's 34. Thaddeus Young is a little bit is a few years younger, making similar money over a 3 year deal instead of a 2 year deal. So the Kings just throwing money at, do you think that they got significantly better with those signings?
Not really.
They kept Barnes, they brought in Ariza, they brought in Corey Joseph, and then what was the other? And Dwayne Dedman. But like in the Western Conference, that team's not making the playoffs.
Yeah, you need a bench though, and this is kind of what the Bulls are doing. But the Kings are in a different spot. Like I feel like they're at least a little bit ahead of what the Bulls are doing in terms of being competitive. They're probably a year ahead of the Bulls, so it kind of makes sense in terms of what they were trying to do. And I don't know. I guess you can't lure technically stars to go to Sacramento. Like, who wants to go play in Sacramento? But for them, I think they're going to be improved again, and it doesn't change any of their starting roles or anything like that, but you're going to have more so than anything, a little bit more depth across all of your positions, which I think the Kings were looking for. Let's bounce over to, let's get the Stars out of the way, because most people know where the Stars ended up, and let's talk about those guys really quick. So let's talk about the Celtics. Kemba Walker going there 4 years, $141 million. They also picked up Enes Kanter today at 2 years, $10 million, and he went there as well. So a little bit of assurance in the big department for the Celtics, and also replacing Kyrie Irving with Kemba Walker. How did you feel about this move, and do you like this and the fact that Kemba Walker is no longer stuck in Charlotte, where only about 250 people are watching him a night?
Yeah, I'm happy for Kemba that he sees this opportunity, because clearly that guy was just so underappreciated in Charlotte. And, I will stand for MJ's the GOAT of basketball players always, forever, and, twice on Sunday. That man cannot run an NBA organization. I don't know what the fuck MJ is doing. And the fact that they essentially let Kemba walk for nothing, and worse than letting him walk for nothing, got duped into overpaying Terry Rozier in a sign-and-trade. Like, that is worse than a fumble of just letting a star of Kemba's caliber walk for nothing. If you knew that you weren't willing to commit max money, like in the realm of $185, $190 million to Kemba Walker, then trade him. Trade him and get something that you feel is a fair package. Or maybe sign him to the deal and then quietly look to trade him. Like, I after the fact, I don't understand the steps and of the process and their decision-making when it came to what they were doing with Kemba Walker. It made no freaking sense. So I'm happy for Kemba that he's getting a fresh start.
This is unbelievable that they overpaid Terry Rozier, man. 3 years at $59 million. Are you kidding me for Terry Rozier?
It's ridiculous. I think I saw that over the course of the entirety of his Charlotte Hornets career that Kemba made $58.5 million.
Yes, Terry Rozier got paid more than Kemba Walker made in the entire career with the Hornets. Unbelievable.
That's disgusting. It's ridiculous, and it's not right. It's not fair. So I'm glad that Kemba got himself a fat payday from Boston. Good for freaking him. 4 years, 140. I'm curious to see how things work out in Boston, because clearly Kyrie was a giant locker room problem and a headache for everybody, and that team had all kinds of issues. And they lost Al Horford to Philly. We can talk about that in a second if you want. Added Enes Kanter as some backup front court depth. I don't know if Boston's going to be good next year. Kemba's a great player, but to me, there's just still so many unknowns with Boston, including, to me, a big one being Gordon Hayward. And if he can actually come back and be an all-star caliber player again, this past season coming back from his injury was really rough, got relegated to the bench for a while, actually like looked like a more efficient, meaningful piece of the team as serving as a bench role, but now maybe with things shuffled around again, you're looking at him being a starter and like coming up with some kind of new lineup. I don't know. I will say that I'm not confident that doing a Kemba for Kyrie swap and losing Al Horford gets the Celtics anywhere closer to being a team that goes to the finals out of the East. I don't buy it.
Yeah, this could have been worse for the Celtics. I mean, they could have just not ended up with Kemba Walker and really been screwed. But I agree with you. I think they're still going to be one of the top four or five teams in the East, depending on what Kawhi decides to do with the Raptors. But yeah, it's definitely going to be different. It's going to be a little bit of like, it's not even a rebuild. It's like a retool on the fly for them. But going, shifting to
Gar's favorite word, it's retool.
Retool, not rebuild. Unbelievable. But I did like the Sixers. What they did is ended up adding Al Horford. They signed Tobias Harris to 5 years, $180 million, and they also re-signed Mike Scott to 2 years, $9.8 million. So I was actually surprised that Al Horford went to the 76ers, but that's going to be really, really good. That team is going to be massive in terms of just spacing and verticality. Like, all of those dudes are over 6'6". It's unbelievable, but I think this is a good move, and it's a good insurance policy for the 76ers to sign Al Horford just in case Joel Embiid can't get through an entire season or gets hurt. I think his ability to play in the pick and roll with Ben Simmons is going to only improve things for that 76ers team. And look, I think Here's a question for you. Who do you think is going to have the bigger impact, Al Horford in the next 4 years, or what Jimmy Butler would have been able to do had you signed him to a max deal?
Honestly, probably Jimmy Butler. For Philly specifically.
Really? I'm going with Al Horford. Look, I was going to go the opposite way.
Al Horford is a solid veteran, but he is a veteran. 33 going on 34, and they just gave him $109 million. He is great insurance for Joel Embiid, who is a very dominant player when he's on the floor and healthy. But to me, and look, this is coming from someone who did not want the Bulls to pay Jimmy Butler max money, and was fine that they traded him, because the Bulls giving him the super max would have just completely crippled this team, in my opinion. Jimmy Butler was their go-to guy in the playoffs. There's no denying that. When they needed buckets, clutch buckets, Jimmy Butler was the one who delivered them. Yeah, he clashed and he pulled focus away from Ben Simmons, who's like this supposedly amazing up-and-coming point forward and one of the best young players in the league. I still think that Ben Simmons is wildly overrated. The dude can't hit a shot to save his life. And in those big moments in the playoffs, Ben Simmons folded and folded hard. Joel Embiid looked overwhelmed at times and not ready for the big moment when the Sixers needed big moments to happen in the playoffs. Jimmy Butler was that guy. To me, the Sixers adding Al Horford to their front court, cool, good for you. Signing Tobias Harris to a 5-year, $180 million deal, I think is ludicrous. And it was the backup plan to giving Jimmy Butler the max. And this was another thing, kind of like the Knicks, and are we willing to offer Durant the max? But it turned out to be, well, like he just didn't give him a meeting in the first place. The other thing that I thought was interesting was the contradiction of reports with Jimmy and whether or not he was given a full supermax offer from the Sixers. Because there were some reports out there for a while that were saying, well, no, he didn't even really get the max offer. They were ready to move on from him. They offered it to Tobias Harris instead. The more trustworthy reports that came out after that are, no, the Sixers absolutely offered Jimmy the max, and he said, thanks, no thanks, send me to Miami.
Yeah, I think I read some, too, and just checking in with some people, that it didn't sound like Jimmy Butler had the best of times in Philadelphia over those, whatever it was, 6 months that he was there. Seems like he just didn't, it didn't fit and it didn't click with what he wanted to do there. So it kind of makes sense. Like he moved on and he was like, yeah, you know what? I'm out of here. Go try something different. But you're right on Tobias Harris is a good player, really good player. But I'm glad I'm not the team paying him 5 years, $180 million for a dude that's a borderline all-star. But they had to do it, right? Like they couldn't just let him walk and let Jimmy walk at the same time.
Well, no, they couldn't lose him and Jimmy. So when it became clear to them, if we believe that that is the case, that Jimmy said, I'm not taking the max that you're offering me. I want to go play in Miami. Then the Sixers had to offer Tobias that deal to keep him. And, you know, to their credit, they retooled and added a very respected, very efficient Al Horford, a veteran guy for their front court. They kept Tobias Harris. They still have Embiid and Simmons. It sounds like they're already working on an extension for Simmons. And, you know, they'll probably still be a top three team in the East next year. Are they going to be a title team with the way that they've retooled? Losing Jimmy, keeping Tobias Harris, adding Al Horford? No, I don't think so.
Since we're on the topic of Jimmy Butler, he is now officially in Miami, following in the footsteps of his best friend, Dwayne Wade.
Hollywood as hell, bro.
The crazy thing is Jimmy always talked about how he wanted to win, and it seems like the last couple of years it's been the complete opposite side of that.
He's full of shit. He doesn't want
to win. Yeah, he doesn't really, and that's fine. If winning isn't your top priority, that's fine. Just be clear about it. Don't lie. And I feel right. Like that's kind of what we've gotten from Jimmy Butler over the last handful of years. But good for him. He's going to go down to Miami, and this is what I was telling Tony Gill and Rick Camp this on No Zones is, with Jimmy Butler, I feel like he's been longing for this idea that he'd be the number one guy in a team, and regardless if they won or not, he got paid, and also the fan base absolutely fell in love with him. And I think he's searching for what he didn't get here in Chicago. He thought he was going to be the guy that would stay here for his entire career, that the fans absolutely loved him, and he loved it back. He loved the city here, and I feel like once the Bulls said that they didn't want to build around him, they wanted to build with him, and decided to move him, he didn't get that in Minnesota, and he certainly didn't get it in Minnesota, and he didn't get it with the 76ers. And now going down to Miami, I just, after hearing that comment, and I don't know, maybe this was just in jest by Jimmy Butler playing around on Instagram late night, but hearing him say the things he did about, like, seeing Heat fans and the way that they appreciated Dwayne Wade in his final year, like, I think that's what Jimmy Butler is ultimately looking for in terms of the rest of his career.
He's looking for people to stroke his ego, man. That's all it is. That is all it is with Jimmy now. And like, there are some Jimmy stans that are still out there that I know exist, that exist in Bulls Nation, that are still upset that we traded him and think that he got a bad rap, and they think that the organization did him dirty. And some of that is true. Some of that is true. But it is also true and undeniable that the explosion of Jimmy Butler's ego got out of control and is now just an unstoppable force. And more so than winning, that dude wants attention, and he wants to be the guy. And, of course, it came as no surprise to me to hear that he was a big fan of the farewell fanfare tour that the Heat gave Dwayne Wade, his pal. Jimmy Butler in South Beach makes all the sense.
Agreed with that.
In the world.
4 years, $142 million.
Driving up and down the beaches and the boardwalks, honking at the honeys on the sidewalk, being the guy down in South Beach, following in the footsteps of his pal Dwayne Wade, while also probably never winning anything significant. Of course. Congrats on the contract, Jimmy. Congrats on getting the move you wanted, I suppose. But don't tell us that you care about winning.
Good for Jimmy Butler, though. Like, don't. The dude deserved to get paid. Finally, somebody paid him the max that he was looking for. So like you said, and we have to put this in perspective, too. Think about how much it took for him to get to the point where he's at right now. The dude worked his absolute ass off to become the player that he is. And I can't really think of a player in the NBA right now that worked as hard as Jimmy did and started at the position he did, where he was like, maybe something's there, maybe not. Took him at the back end of the first round, like very last pick in the first round. Worked his ass off to get to the all-star level that he's at. So I will give him that. He did work so hard to get to this point and deserve the money. I just don't know if Miami's getting the same player that they think that they're getting, aka the one that was here with the Bulls in the final couple seasons. Like, those were the highlights that were playing across the jump and all these other places that we're talking about Jimmy Butler. So all these game winners Jimmy Butler hit with the Bulls, I'm like, Jimmy Butler with the Bulls is not the same player you're getting right now in 2019. He's not that same guy anymore, and more attributed to the minutes that he played.
He hit game winners for Philly, too.
True.
Big ones. But, I mean, and to me, that's why I was always against the idea of keeping him around long-term and building around him, is because when it came time for the Bulls to make that decision, they would be faced with offering him a supermax, which it would have been significantly higher than the 4 years, 140 he just got from Miami, and even higher still than the offer the Sixers could have given him. But doing it in the years where Jimmy Butler is between the ages of 30 and 35, to me, that was just like the giant mistake waiting to happen, because this is a guy who played a lot of heavy minutes, including some very heavy minutes under Tibbs, not once but twice, two stints, first with the Bulls and then again in Minnesota for a year. I hope that Jimmy Butler doesn't fall apart, because it would be really fun to see him continue to play and be a star down in Miami, to a degree where it's like they're not a real threat in the East, but at least they're an entertaining story every season. And I have no ill will towards Jimmy Butler. Never have. I'm just glad he's not our problem anymore. I don't know if paying that dude $140 million over the ages of 30 to 35 is going to work out for them, or if it's going to come back.
Yeah, we'll definitely find out. But yeah, good for Jimmy Butler. It'll be exciting to kind of watch him still staying in the East. So we'll definitely get more from him. Let's just bounce around to a couple other teams, Matt, and let's get some quick action takes here. I really like what the Pacers did. I really, really like what the Pacers did. They paid Malcolm Brogdon the money, but I'm cool with a team like that paying him that type of money because they did lose Bojan Bogdanovic to the Utah Jazz. I also like their signing of Jeremy Lin. I think that's a low-risk, high-reward type of player, and he's younger too, so the core that they have right now currently constructed on that Pacers team kind of fits in line, same thing with Jeremy Lin and Malcolm Brogdon, guys that are anywhere between 24 and 26. So I liked both of those moves and the money that they spent there. And even with Victor Oladipo being out till probably January, still think that Pacers team's going to be really pretty decent.
Mean, when you think about it in the context of the Bulls fans who wanted the Bulls to go out and get Brogdon and then realizing what it cost the Pacers to do it, I'm fine that the Bulls didn't. Because we were thinking about, you know, can the Bulls do some wiggling and come up with a way to offer Brogdon 4 years 80? Not only did the Pacers give him more than that and give him 4 years 85, but they had to give the Bucks draft capital. Like, I'm sorry, Malcolm Brogdon is a good player. Coming off a 50-40-90 season, those are the sexy numbers that everybody's pointing to. Can be a guy who could play in the backcourt, play as a point guard at times, play off the ball at times, kind of like we were talking about Satoransky filling a similar role alongside Zach LaVine. It made sense, but to me, that is too steep of a price for Malcolm Brogdon, especially considering the fact that this is a dude with injury issues from the calves down, and that to me is a red flag that is kind of a gamble to pay a guy that kind of money. And I've also heard recently that the reason the Bucks were willing to do that and let him go, and that they, of course, prioritized not only keeping Chris Middleton and giving Chris Middleton the max of 5 years, 178, but also paying handsomely Brook Lopez and taking care of that first, giving Brook Lopez 4 years, $52 million, you know, not cheap, certainly. The reason that they prioritize those two guys over Brogdon is that they are concerned about his ankle and his feet. So, to me, if that is true, then I am fine that the Bulls passed on that. If he ends up being still a healthy player and has another 50-40-90 season with the Pacers and you know, helps them get back to the playoffs again, you know, after a really inspiring year where they had to overcome the loss of Oladipo, good for them, happy for them, even as our Central Division rivals that we're trying to get you know, leapfrog past back to relevance, cool. But I, you know, based on figuring out what it costs to get Brogdon, I am fine that the Bulls went a different direction.
Yeah, I'm good on the 4 years, $85 million for Malcolm Brogdon. Paying him more than Zach LaVine, and that's what shocks me, man. Is that you see a lot of Bulls fans talking about wanting to find a way to sign him to that type of money. I wonder if those same fans were the ones bitching and moaning about the Bulls paying Zach LaVine last summer. Because if you are, you're in a complete contradiction to yourself.
Guarantee you, there's some pretty fat Venn diagram going on right there.
let's go on. My boy Thomas Bryant from Indiana got paid. 3 years, $25 million by the Wizards. Good for him. He's a really good dude. I think he's only going to get better with time too. He only spent 1 year at Indiana and then got drafted. So they're getting a young center, the center that they've been looking for literally forever. Had a really good season with the Wizards. So shout out to him. He went all the way from undrafted to G League to NBA contract to now getting paid. So good for him. Couple other deals that were small, but. Small and insignificant. Daniel House, 3 years, $11 million, which I think he's going to be good for the Rockets. Gerald Green signed a one-year deal with the Rockets as well. Couple other deals. Garrett Temple went to the Nets, 2 years, $10 million. Here's one, Matt. I got to ask you this. Is Reggie Rose secretly running the Bulls Twitter account for NBC Sports Chicago?
No, I've never seen him there. Why?
Because literally... They tweet out about Derrick Rose leading up to this free agency probably 5 to 10 times a day.
Yeah.
So I was like,
you know
even
why,
before that,
right?
Because, no, why?
Because content is king, and there are millions of, I'd say, substandard intelligent Bulls fans out there who are still more obsessed with Derrick Rose than they are about the actual well-being of the team they claim to be fans of.
I like the deal that he got, though.
And guess what? Derrick Rose content in Chicago slays.
That's true.
Because it's either people who are Rose stans or people who, like myself, are ready to move the fuck on. yelling at each other on Twitter. So all you have to do is lob up a little Derrick Rose content softball and Twitter goes fucking berserk.
Yeah, I'm not surprised by that, but I like the deal that he got from the Pistons. I think he can be good on that team, adding him to Andre Drummond and also Blake Griffin, and them not being completely sold on Reggie Jackson and also losing Ish Smith to the Wizards. I think that's a good spot for him. You know, it's kind of a low-key spot, and that's, I think, going to be the best thing for Derrick Rose.
Right.
Like, people were talking about him going to sign with the Lakers. Like, no, that's exactly what he doesn't need to
Hell
do.
No.
Like stay in a semi-smaller market, going to be on a competitive team, going to still be able to play his backup role like he did in Minnesota. And if he's fully healthy, I think he's going to be pretty damn good for that Pistons team.
Yeah. I think it is a great situation for everyone. He can provide them some punch scoring off the bench, just like he proved at times with Minnesota. I'm glad that he didn't come back here because we all know why, that I was never a fan of that idea. But like you said, like a small market team like Detroit, where nobody's really even paying them any attention, they might be a back-end playoff team in the East, but nobody's going to care. Nobody's talking about the Pistons on a regular basis next season. And the non-spotlight, I think, helped Derrick in Minnesota, and it should probably help him in Detroit as well. And it doesn't hurt that, like, you know, Minneapolis, it also conveniently is not that far from Chicago. And we all know that Derrick Rose, you know, had those moments when he was in New York and just got overwhelmed and, like, went AWOL because he had to come home to Chicago and, you know, see family and was just not emotionally and mentally strong enough to deal with being that far away from home in a crazy market like New York. And that really got to him and was a big challenge for him. So to me, small market team, not too far away from his hometown, perfect fit for Derrick. And, you know, happy for him that he's you know, found a second life in his NBA career. And happier still.
Quickly, let's go back to the Warriors really fast. So obviously, Klay Thompson, 5 years, $190 million, signed his deal. They also traded and re-upped. Traded Kevin Durant to the Nets and got D'Angelo Russell back in return. I was very, 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 very shocked by this. Glad that the Bulls didn't do this with the D'Angelo Russell thing. 4 years, $117 million. And if, in fact, you were going to end up having to deal for him anyway, like, the Warriors had to give up a first-round pick on top of that, which is not that big of a deal. I mean, you're getting D'Angelo Russell back, so there isn't much complaining. And the Warriors aren't going to be in the draft for, like, the next decade. I think they've given up a ton of their picks already. So very good for the Warriors in terms of losing a guy, but also adding a guy. And, two, like, if Steph and Draymond continue to maybe start to fall off here in the next back end of their contracts, at least you got a younger player, too, that you can start to build around, looking, you know, just even beyond the next 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly a nice way to keep the Warriors relevant, and, you know, hats off to them for thinking quick on their feet and making this happen as soon as they found out that they were going to lose KD to Brooklyn. Because certainly, at least in the beginning of the 1920 season, and you assume even if he does come back at the latter stages of next season, or maybe for a playoff run, they're going to ease Clay in and be careful, especially considering they just signed that guy to a Supermax deal for, you know, a warrior for life, as he said on Instagram earlier today. But while Clay is on the shelf rehabbing that ACL, you have a pretty interesting backcourt in Steph and D'Angelo Russell. You know, if you decide to go that route, and if you decide to keep him around beyond that, there is, you know, the Warriors just essentially started the trend of positionless basketball in the NBA and can go small ball and create, like, a newer, even smaller version of the Hamptons Five, where you're playing Russell, Clay, and Steph on the court at the same time. And that would be pretty interesting and pretty exciting and maybe effective. Who knows? But the other thing that we've also heard over, you know, the, you know, 12 to 24 hours since the Russell, D'Angelo Russell sign and trade went down, is that the Warriors aren't necessarily hell-bent on keeping him around and just wanted to get that asset from Brooklyn as they figured out that they were losing Kevin Durant, and might actually look around and see if there are some interested parties that are willing to deal a trade to get D'Angelo Russell and maybe find some pieces that the Warriors like a little bit better.
That's interesting. I wouldn't put it past them either. Even if they kept him for the first year and then just decided next summer when they're going to be fully healthy again, say, hey, what can we get for him, especially with Draymond Green's contract coming up next season? That's going to be also something to think about. But found that very interesting, that deal going down. Let's see, a couple other moves, and then I just want to go rapid fire with you about guys that we talked about potentially signing with the Bulls, and we'll give out the deals, the teams that they went to, and I want to ask you whether or not you would have signed, you would have been okay with the Bulls signing them to that deal. The last guys we've got to get to here that are sort of a big names, Jamal Murray getting a big contract from the Nuggets, 5 years, $170 million. Damian Lillard extending his contract too, and now he's on a contract that's 6 years, $258 million, which is crazy. Absurd, crazy.
I mean, Dame time is worth every single cent of that, based on the star that he is in that market, that basically has like the Blazers and nothing else. No offense to the MLS fans, you know, Portland Timbers are apparently a big deal, but you know, that city belongs to Damian.
Yeah, Lillard. The MLS is blowing up. I've been hearing that since they started. The MLS, just wait for it. And it is. It's coming. But
hey, careful, man. You're talking to a soccer fan.
It's coming. Oh, I'm sure it's coming. Check in with me in 20 years, and we'll see if it's even at the NHL's level of excitement. But let's continue on. Let's see. Rudy Gay, weird. But that dude continues to get paid. 2 years, man. $32 million with the Spurs.
Good for Rudy Gay, man. Such a Spurs move, right?
It really is.
Signing a savvy vet like Rudy Gay. That's such a pop move.
And they also signed Damari Carroll, too, which seems like a very Spurs type of player, too, who can shoot the three, space the floor. So interesting for him. 2 years, $13 million. Some of these other guys. So let's do this now. Let's do the Bulls' potential interest, where they ended up signing, and whether or not you would have been okay with the Bulls signing them to that. So let's start here. Let's start with Ish Smith, 2 years, $12 million to the Washington Wizards.
Would have been fine as a blah second or third or last resort, but I like Satoransky much more.
Yeah, I'm with you. It would have been okay, and it would have been a cheap deal, so it wouldn't have. You could have spent some of your other cap space elsewhere. But yeah, I'm cool with him going elsewhere. How about Elfrid Payton? 2 years, $16 million going to the New York dumpster fires.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, I was maybe coming around to the idea of Elfrid Payton, just knowing that the Bulls were probably going to miss on some of the more desirable point guard options in free agency, because everyone was going to get overpaid. And he did actually look pretty decent at the back end of last season. But no, 2 years, 16 for Elfrid Payton. Give me Satoransky instead.
Ricky Rubio, 3 years, $51 million. I'm very, very glad. Even though I did like Ricky Rubio and I wanted the Bulls to sign him, I'm glad that they didn't sign him to that much money. And the Suns got their point guard.
That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous money. And I'm glad that the Bulls weren't even really in position to give him that much money, obviously. And I mean, Who's running the show? Is Rubio running the show? Is Devin Booker running the show? What's going on?
Yeah, at least they've got a guy now that'll at least facilitate to Booker and Ayton. Real quick side question, because we got this on Twitter yesterday or in our text and voicemail line. They asked us earlier earlier in the season, if you had to line up the four worst teams from this year in the lottery in terms of projections, Bulls, Cavs, Knicks, and Suns, how would you rank those teams in terms of who's got the best young core? Wow.
Honestly, I'd say either Bulls or Phoenix at one, close, and then Cavs and Knicks after that. The Bulls are first or second on that list.
Yeah, I had Suns, Bulls, Knicks, Cavs.
Yeah. I mean, the Cavs are hopeless. They've got an,
yeah, all they
got
have
an aging
is
Kevin Love on a gigantic contract and a backcourt of Colin Sexton and Darius Garland.
That's all the young players they have. I know they have a shitload of picks coming up, though, so they're gonna recoup those guys relatively quickly, but it's going to take a few years. So I said that, you know, between Colin Sexton and also getting the new point guard in Darius Garland. Like, that's basically it. And then you have, like, Larry Nance you can throw in there as your young core. Whereas, like, the Phoenix Suns, you got legitimately seven dudes on that team that are young, exciting, and could potentially be something. And so I had the Bulls. I think it was splitting hairs between the Suns and the Bulls in terms of who has the better core. And then the Knicks have a few nice pieces, but it's certainly nothing to write home about, that's for sure. So yeah, I just was curious about that. Let's continue on, though.
How about Pat Bev, man? We haven't talked about him.
Oh, yeah, Patrick Beverley, 3 years, $40 million.
I'm happy for him. You know, he got paid. And listen, 3 years, 40 is not all that far off from the 341 that the Bulls gave to Thaddeus Young. The Bulls got Satoransky on a cheaper deal, 3 years, 30. I never truly believed that Bev was a realistic option based on what we knew about the Clippers, and people thought that Kawhi was going to just be like, all right, screw you, Toronto, I'm going to the Clippers. Now it sounds more and more like it's going to be, screw you, Toronto, I'm going to the Lakers, which I hope doesn't happen, but that sounds like what it's going to be. And the Clippers are a fun, young, exciting team with, like, a bunch of role players and like, no stars last season that ended up making the playoffs and making some noise, gave the Warriors some trouble. I think Pat Bev always wanted to stay with the Clippers. He just wanted to get paid. And so there was a time where maybe the Clippers were a team that people were talking about offering two max slots and opening up enough money to be able to offer two max slots to Kawhi and Jimmy or some combination of Kawhi and another star. And it looks like that's just not happening. Most of the big dominoes have fallen. You know, we heard that Kawhi still maybe taking a meeting with the Clippers as of Monday night, but we'll see. It sounds like the Lakers have leapfrogged the Clippers as likelihood of where Kawhi ends up. And Clippers were looking at that and saying, all right, well, we're going to pay Pat Bev to stick around because we appreciate him and we know he's an important piece. And I think that he was, if ever, like, really, really interested in the Bulls, as would be fun to come home, play in Chicago, be a, you know, a veteran mentor and leader on a young team, bond with the young guys. Maybe there was some interest there with Pat Bev, but I think more than anything, it was...
Totally agree with you. But even if the Bulls did sign him to this deal, I'd have been happy with it. I mean, you could have turned around, signed him to that. And then in terms of your backup bigs, you could have picked up a guy like Al-Farouq Aminu, or you could have picked up Trevor Ariza, or any of these other bigs that are making anywhere between $8 and $12 million. You could have talked to Taj Gibson too. So I would have been perfectly fine if they would have signed Patrick Beverley to 3 years, $40 million. That's certainly better than what I thought he was going to get, which was north of $15 million a year. So good for him. Yeah, though, it seems like he wanted to stay right in LA with the Clippers and really loved the couple of years that he's had there and likes what they're doing. So I think I'm with you in terms of, like, they were just playing for leverage.
Yeah, I think that's all it was. The other one that I kind of heard a few Bulls fans talk about maybe trying to pry away from Dallas was Maxi Kleber, which I think he's a good young player, still in his prime, 27 years old, showed some really good things with a Dallas team that was up and coming this season. I didn't think he was a realistic option. I'm pretty sure that, you know, the Mavs were going to do what they could to keep him around. And we saw that on Monday when Mavs signed him for four more years at $35 million.
I'll be honest with you. I don't know too much about Maxi Kleber. All I know is, if I don't know the dude, I know the dude's name, but I've literally not even watched a minute of him play.
I've watched a lot of Maxi Kleber because John never shuts up about
it. Giving him 4 years, $35 million after the fact that you just paid Dwight Powell 3 years, $33 million, and then you paid Kristaps Porzingis 5 years, $158 million.
Dude.
Like, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Like, what the hell are the Mavericks doing? They're, like, taking the playbook out of the Knicks and just sign every power forward slash big that we have.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what's going on with them.
So, I don't really have an opinion on him. J.J. Redick, really quick. I know he's not a Bulls type of player or anybody of interest.
One of my favorite low-key signings that was made.
The Pelicans are going to be really fun to watch next year. They may not win a whole ton of games, but
so much fun. And, I mean, to me, getting J.J. Redick on that deal, yeah, he's getting a little bit up there, a little long in the tooth. I think that was a great signing by the Pelicans. And I think it was Jackie Mack who was saying this on the most recent episode of the Hoop Collective podcast. Like, Dan Gilbert should be flogged in the streets for lowballing David Griffin and basically shooing him out of Cleveland. because David Griffin, since he took over for that organization that was just up shit creek with the whole Anthony Davis situation, has been crushing it. Crushing it.
Yeah, this is his little revenge time for being fired with the Cavs. So he has, and that Pelicans team is just so good. And they still have some decent amount of cap space to spend, too. I'm pretty sure like around $20 million or so. So they could still scoop up a couple of these guys that are hanging out there in free agency, the, you know, mid-tier type of players, because they did lose a couple guys, too. So, and Julius Randle being one of them. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see who else they sign. Last guy, and then we'll get out of here because we're running up against the clock. Nikola Mirotic, Matt.
Dude.
Decided to not play in the NBA anymore, and he got absolutely freaking paid. 4 years, $70 million to play in Barcelona in the Euro League.
I mean, that's a fat ton of money to go play in the Euro League. So good for him. I also always thought that Nico was just never really truly happy being here in the States and playing in the NBA. Always just seemed like a guy who was struggling to, you know, adapt to life in Chicago and just never really felt like he belonged. And I don't think he ever really truly had a lot of friends in any of his various stops. You know, teammates are teammates, but like friends. I don't know. Nico always just kind of seemed like an outsider to me. And, you know, if this is the decision that's going to make him happy and be the best decision for his family, and he's getting paid that handsomely to go play in Europe, then good for fucking Nico, man. I'm happy for him.
Yeah, Nico made $30 million here in the U.S. playing basketball. So good for him. I mean, 4 years, $70 million. He probably is going to put up like 25 and 10 a night, right?
Oh, he's going to be a star over there.
So that's good for him. And, you know, just getting, I saw all the jokes too flying about Portis. Is like, now he's at least an ocean away from Portis, which, you know, I roll my eyes at that, but it's kind of funny when people make these jokes as far away from Portis as possible. But yeah, I found that very shocking. Like, and going back to Barcelona, because I heard that there was a lot of teams really interested in signing him this offseason. So
I heard Utah was interested. I heard there was another team that I can't recall. Dallas. Like, there were some teams that wanted to throw some money at Nico. And he was just like, nah, I'm good. Peace out. Which, you know what, man? More power to you. Do what you want to do.
So I think that does it for like all the guys that we've talked about so far, and obviously still deals coming in and will be made over the next few weeks. So we'll continue to talk about all of those guys and where everybody else ends up landing. I don't know if the Bulls are done, but if I had to make a bet, they probably have one more move left, and it's probably like a very, very, very small move because they can still use their exception, $4.7 million, to sign somebody. And they could also still very well move Chris Dunn if they wanted to. So I don't think they're done, but I wouldn't expect anything significant to happen anytime soon.
Yeah, and they do still have some time to make a decision on Archie Diacono if they want to. You know, it sounds like some of the other you know, outside pieces from last season's roster are not going to be hanging around. You know, people asking us, well, what about Jack Harrison? What about Wayne Selden, Walt Lemon? I think those are all names that we're not going to be talking about next year. I think Archie is the one that might still stick around, especially if they do end up dealing Dunn. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see him use that that room exception to add one more piece, maybe, you know, some more wing depth. Another shooter off the bench, and we'll see. You know, there are still some names out there, but the market has certainly dried up quickly because I also love how, you know, it was so funny. The NBA was like, all right, guys, we also, you know, we're aware that this whole, like, you know, 12:01 a.m. Eastern time is kind of a pain in the ass, so let's just like move it up 6 hours so that we don't all have to just like pull an all-nighter for no reason. And then even beyond that, Woj was just like, oh, free agency starts at 6 p.m. Eastern time? No, fuck you. It starts at like 2 p.m. because I got bombs to drop.
It was a wild success for the NBA in terms of popularity and what they did in terms of driving traffic. I mean, because most people are probably paying attention to the NBA, at least certainly if you're a casual fan, you're probably paying attention at least last night. If you're diehard fans like you and I are, then you're paying attention more than last night, but still, like, wild success for the NBA.
I haven't blinked since noon on Sunday. So, yeah, I mean, this is the great time, man. I'm hoping that the Bulls make another move between now and, you know, evening of the 3rd of July. So I don't know about you, but I'm getting out of Dodge for a while over the 4th, going up to Mish, spending some time with the family. And I would love nothing more than to just put my phone in a drawer and ignore it for at least a couple of days, knowing that the Bulls have made all the moves they can possibly make.
24 hours, and then we got Bulls Summer League on Friday.
Whoop! July 5th, right?
Yes.
First tip off of the Bulls first Summer League game.
So we get to see some of those young guys in action.
I did hear confirmation that Wendell and Hutch both playing second time around. So between them, Kobe White, Daniel Gafford, we should hopefully have some fun, exciting Bulls Summer League action to look forward to.
We get Denzel Valentine to return to try to duplicate his championship.
Banners.
So yeah, that'll be at least exciting. We'll have some NBA action, and then it's going to be a drought for about a month and a half after that, leading up to September when training camp starts. But
for some people, we'll be here.
Yes, we will be here talking all summer long. So certainly a different tone to this free agency than we had just a year ago, Matt, talking about Jabari and Zach LaVine's deals, and now turning the page here. So pretty crazy.
Speaking of dominoes yet to fall, Jabari Parker.
He going back to the Wizards. It's just going to be a matter of time.
I've heard that they're letting him go, man.
He'll go somewhere. Somebody will take a chance on him.
You know what I've heard? Lakers.
What, is he going to sign a small deal just because he got paid veteran, from the Bulls 1 year?
Some veteran scoring off the bench, man. They're going to get Kawhi, then they're going to sign a couple of old weirdo vet random hodgepodge pieces. Jabari's going to be one of them.
Makes sense, though. I mean, they almost dealt for him back in February for Kentavious Caldwell-Pope.
Exactly.
So, but real quick, give me a name or two who you would like to see the Bulls sign on that 4.7. I'll give you two that I've got. Jamal Crawford, if he doesn't retire. And who's the second guy?
Vince Carter is my other one that I really kind of sneakily want.
Yes.
Because he said he wanted to play one more season, and he's still on the board. And, you know, I know everybody's saying, well, like, you know, he wants minutes. Do the Bulls have minutes to offer him?
We'll find minutes.
Like, dude, give him Denzel's minutes, okay? if Vince Carter wants to come end his career in Chicago, which Vince Carter is not only a, like, you know, multi-generational star, but he also, of course, is one of the biggest stars of NBA All-Star Weekend ever. You know, the old/young Vince Carter dunk contest moments. The Bulls have All-Star Weekend in 2020. How awesome would it be if Vince Carter, veteran savvy bench player on the Chicago Bulls, is there at All-Star Weekend as part of his, like, grandiose NBA farewell season? That would be so dope.
I would be down for either of those guys. Jamal Crawford, who I've raved about a bunch of different times and said the Bulls should sign him if he decides not to retire or decides not to stay with the Suns. Just a really, really solid teammate, really good player for a long time. So I think he could be beneficial to all of the guys on this Bulls team. And same thing with Vince Carter. Like, if both of those dudes want minutes, 10 minutes a night, 15 minutes a night, Bulls should find a way to do it. But yeah, down for both,
you know,
of those
Crawford
guys
would be going full circle, man. And, you know, spent his first few seasons with the Bulls.
That's true. That is true. I think that's going to about do it here on Locked On Bulls. Hit us up with your thoughts, 331-979-1369, the place to do that. Drop your texts and your voicemails. We're going to do an entire free agency edition of Locked On Bulls on tomorrow's episode. So make sure you get those in, 331-979-1369. Drop us voicemails, text messages. You can hit us up on Twitter, at Jordan C. Malley, at Bulls_Peck, and at Locked On Bulls. We're live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central Time. For Matt Peck, I'm Jordan Malley. Bulls Nation, have a wonderful day. We'll be back tomorrow with a fresh episode. For Jordan and Matt, we are out. Deuces.
Locked On Bulls, a show for the most passionate fan base in the NBA. Hosts Jordan Malley and Matt Peck dive into the best Bulls news and stories around the NBA. Locked On Bulls is live on Dash Radio every Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, starting at 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. For more content and to stay up to date, head over to LockedOnBulls.com.